So Politico just came out with a story 32 minutes ago, right before Hans and I were going to start our podcast. Trump is set to go on Joe Rogan on Friday. We don't know for how long yet, but the guess is probably at least a couple hours. I think Rogan's podcasts, I'm an avid Rogan listener. I can't remember the last time he did a podcast that was less than 2 hours. And I'm pretty sure that's one of the conditions. And Trump has done other podcasts that were at least 2 hours with other people. He did a podcast with Flagrant, with Andrew Schultz. I think that was an hour and a half-ish. He did another one with PBD. He did another one. He's been on a podcast run. But this comes on the news from last week that there was a lot of stuff floating around that both Trump and Kamala Harris were going to go on Rogan's podcast in the coming days. For those that are following this story closely, or you know, the U.S. politics, the election is in exactly 2 weeks from today, so 14 days. So good luck getting away from insane rhetoric from the internet. Hopefully this is a place where it's nice and centered and balanced. That's our goal. You know, I think Hans and I both view ourselves as Hans is shaking his head. Hopefully you get some reasonable center discussion when it comes to this stuff. But yeah, I think what's very interesting about this news is that, you know, Politico on Ground News, who's not a sponsor, but they're a great resource for understanding the bias and the factuality of news websites. Politico is ranked as being slightly left-leaning, but their factuality rating is high, this story being published by Politico gives us sort of that backing that says, hey, this is likely very much happening. And it's par for the course with what Trump has been doing, which is sort of going in this massive podcast run with, I think, trying to reach independent voters. And in my opinion, doing a really good job of getting himself out there. Jury's still out if it's going to resonate or not. Which is sort of the a strategy that is vastly different from what Kamala Harris is doing, which is trying to be a little bit more towards publications that will give her a favorable interview. She has gone and, you know, she went on Fox, which was a pretty contentious interview. That a bunch of clips came out of there. But typically speaking, has been going on a media run for publications that would be, let's say, more than fair to her. So how do you take these news, Hans? Remember, we're trying to be centered and balance, Hans. Come on now, bro. We are now official podcast and we got to act professionally, damn it.
I mean, the challenge that I have in being centered and balanced in this is that we are podcasters and, you know, like we have made our bets on the future of media and the trends of decentralized media overtaking the legacy corporate media, you know, over time. I've lived outside of the influence. I haven't had a cable subscription in like over a decade. I can't tell you the last time I watched CNN or Fox or, you know, any of these, you know, MSNBC, other than short clips that I see here and there on social media. And so, you know, I think from that standpoint, like, people like you and I who live in this world, this is a completely different world than the world that is occupied by people who actually do continue to consume all of these news publications, whether it's, you know, the New York Times via text type of, you know, a publication, or all of the actual video news channels that we spoke about earlier. And it seems like, you know, to your point, the Trump is doubling down on one of his successful strategies in the 2016 election was trying to really make a big bet on social media and thinking that there was an arbitrage opportunity where he could actually reach voters and drum up support on social media in a way that the establishment politicians couldn't and weren't, because and this was both true on the Republican side and the Democratic side. This is part of Trump has essentially taken over the Republican Party and completed a coup. The old Republican Party that existed before 2016 is no longer something that exists.
Yeah, it's MAGA. It's the Trump Party. It's the MAGA Party.
It is the MAGA Party. And the, you know, there are still politicians inside the Republican Party who are that legacy Republican politician establishment. but those are, you know, they're finding themselves increasingly, you know, disfavored. I mean, Dick Cheney being a great example of someone who, you know, that's supposed to be core Republican, but now coming out in favor of Kamala Harris. And I think to a lot of people, that is just a very obvious, but also telling mask off moment that, you know, these neocon establishment uniparty politicians, they are in support of Kamala Harris. And, you know, she can't run on a policy of change because she is everything that Donald Trump is not. And that's just it's a very different world. I would not personally bet on the ability of legacy media, especially like the trust in legacy media just absolutely plummeted over the last 4 years. I think COVID was an incredibly huge, we'll call it a black pill on just the quality of what we were being told by all these authority figures, whether it was the media authority figures or whether it was the things that we were allowed to say or not say, even on social media, whether it was, you know, should we trust the WHO? Should we trust the CDC? Like, all of these things have just taken a massive hit. These were things that Trump was saying, you know, he called them liars and fake news from 2016 onwards. And I think for many people, that just did not hit home. It did not resonate. It's like, okay, yeah, whatever. Like, sure. But then after COVID, I think people go back and they think about what he said, and they interpret it differently now than they did before. And, you know, there's still going to be a contingent of people that don't, you know, agree with that. And they're going to continue to gobble up all of that mainstream media. I don't think that's the majority of Americans anymore. And at least it's not the majority of Americans my age. Like, I know very few people in our demographic who are not at the very least much more open to seeing the points that Trump has been making for a long time, if not like just completely supporting him. And, you know, I don't know hardly anyone who watches legacy media. I don't know hardly anyone who buys into the narrative that the legacy media is trying to force feed down the American public's throat. And, you know, we just have better options now.
Yeah, I think that's great commentary. The trend that I've been seeing, and I would love to hear your perspective on this. I mean, we're both kind of in an overlapping bubble. I would say our bubbles probably overlap quite a bit, but I would love to sort of hear your take on this. It really does feel like this election cycle, I mean, every election cycle is like this, obviously, but this one more than usual because of how sort of stratified, like how much the extremes are being represented in each party, and the center's kind of like stuck without a candidate, really. You know, I think Trump and Kamala are both trying to sell themselves that way. But I think what's really interesting is that shift, that trend, I'm seeing much more in favor of Trump than I'm seeing in favor of Kamala. And what I've been seeing, this is, some of it is anecdotal and some of it is trying to understand the trend, right? So I'll start with the anecdotal. So what's the anecdotes I've been seeing? Over and over again, more and more people that I know have been lifelong Democrats are no longer Democrat. That's a trend that I have been seeing firsthand, okay? Examples, my friends, my family, and people that I are also friends, but I consider to be sort of more acquaintances when this conversation comes up. The conversation is always rooted around, man, I used to be a Democrat, I'm not anymore. The conversation I had with Galileo Russell on his podcast, Hyperchange.
That was excellent.
That was another eye-opening moment for me, because it's like, okay, and again, this is like a bubble, but it's like so interesting to see, like, it's my bubble, but it's not like that. Not all those people come from the same background, right? Each example that I've listed, friends, family, and sort of acquaintances or people that I work with, right, directly, all every single one of them have their own bubbles, and they're all of them are coming to the same conclusion, which is like, I want to leave the Democratic Party because I feel like it no longer represents me, right? the Galileo example is specifically interesting because it's another anecdotal data point that says, and for those that are not familiar who I'm talking about, and I apologize for this, Galley is an individual that covers finance very closely. He is a longtime Tesla, or he is a longtime liberal, longtime Democrat. He is based out of Seattle, Washington. So a lot of his family and friends historically have had a left-leaning bias, let's say, pro-climate change, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And in the last few months, he has seen a significant percentage of his friends group shifting away from the Democrat Party, where, you know, he mentioned that like 90% of his friends were Democrat. And now that same cohort of friends are now 60% Republican, right? I haven't seen that level of shift in my personal life. It's been like pockets of this happening. So I'm like, okay, so that's kind of crazy. There's a lot of converting happening from one side to the other. And then, and if I think about, okay, if I talk to my parents, so one of the interesting conversations that I was having with my dad and mom, they were like, okay, so one of the things that's going to hurt Trump this election from their viewpoint was January 6th, regardless of how you view that story, right? They think that there's a lot of people that have traditionally been Republicans that just cannot stand how immoral or how terrible that was and how much influence Trump had in doing that. I'm not going to get into the, did he actually do it, did he not? I don't care about that. I just care about like, what are the trends, right? And so their justification is, hey, like the people that have been lifelong conservatives are gonna take issue with that and they won't support Trump, they'll support Kamala instead. But here's the interesting overlap. That cohort of people traditionally are going to be older, okay? Lifelong, usually the Republicans bias to be older. What is the demographic in news that appeals to the older generation? Mainstream media, okay?
Yep.
What media source is shedding viewers like crazy? Mainstream media, okay? And I'm seeing all these different overlaps starting to appear, you know, to the point where I'm like, okay, I personally, you know, I'll say it, I'm having a very hard time seeing how Kamala wins this election. Very, very hard time seeing how she wins this election. If you look at the polls historically, if you just look at it from a polls perspective, the way they have underestimated Trump's support has been very, very consistent. And in this election cycle, if you look at every single poll, just either from independent sources or traditional sources, where Kamala is winning is within the margin of error or is a dead heat. Okay. This bodes extremely well for Trump because Trump will consistently outperform the polls. But I think what's missing in this election cycle is this insane shift away from mainstream media from 2020 to 2024 that's going to shed a ton of independent votes that I think are going to convert to Trump versus Kamala trying to convert that sort of cohort of longtime Republicans coming to her. That's what I see happening. And again, this could be confirmation bias. This could be bubble thinking, right? And I try my hardest to get away from that, but that's what I'm seeing. I would like, what do you think about that? Do you think that's a reasonable conclusion to come to?
I mean, that's exactly where my mind went. You know, I think there is just a baked in skepticism that I think a lot of people have now to whatever the legacy media narrative is. And the fact that they want to push so hard, you know, when you have things that are such blatant lies, like the Very Fine People hoax, that like all you have to do is 5 minutes worth of research to pull up the original, watch the thing, and then see how it was portrayed on the media. And you're like, oh, wow, like you guys are not just, you know, misrepresenting, like you're blatantly lying about this.
Which wasn't fact-checked at the debate with, and that was like one of the things that I'm like, yo, this is crazy, right?
Yeah. Because that's, they don't care about, you know, the truth. When they're talking about misinformation and disinformation, what they're talking about, the ability to cancel people that are not politically correct enough for saying true things that are inconvenient. Yeah. And so this, you know, is so obvious to so many people. And, you know, I have no idea what happened on January 6th. And I am just disinclined to believe whatever they tell me I must believe about it, because I estimate that the likelihood that whatever they're telling me I must believe about it is true is well less than 50%. You know, it's not zero, but it's, you know, it's certainly not 100. It's less than 50. It's somewhere, 25, 30% likelihood of being true. You know, if I'm discounting the value of their reporting on it by that much, it doesn't have that much power to sway my decision making either. And I think that that's the position that a lot of people are in these days. You know, I do think that there's, well, here, let me flip the tables and actually put it back in your court. Do you think that Kamala will actually do an interview on Rogan as well to follow up Trump?
I don't know if she will. I hope that she does. Right? Like, I think as somebody who I'm trying to figure out who to vote for. Okay. I think it would be smart to go on the largest platform in the world. Like, why wouldn't you go on the largest platform in the world? Joe Rogan is the largest platform in the world, like it or not. Mr. Joe Rogan, who in my opinion, is a quite the centrist voice, to especially for American politics. If you listen to him closely, he has a vast variety of views that will land him on both camps pretty consistently. And one of his strengths is that he is able to just talk to anyone. He will talk to anyone, right? And he will do so with respect and try to understand where they're coming from. And the innovation in podcasting is that is what allowed, this format is what allows that to happen, right? So if my theory is correct, that the people that are leaving mainstream media are the ones that Trump will convert, right, for his vote, especially with endorsements from Elon Musk, RFK Jr., Tulsi Gabbard. Like, these are predominant Democrat liberal voices that have liberal missions, transition the world to sustainable energy through electric vehicles, making a vast policy change around health and food and medicine, going against pharmaceutical companies, right? Tulsi Gabbard trying to get people out of wars and bringing people home so people stop dying, right? These are like core liberal values, right? That's what I connect with, okay?
Yeah.
These are strong liberal values. That's what I want, right? And those people are supporting this guy who has, either been smeared by mainstream media or doesn't do himself any favors because sometimes he says some stupid shit, right? So it's like we live in this weird world of like this guy trying to push it. Anyway, so the point I'm trying to make is she would benefit tremendously by going on Rogan, because if she is truly who the Democrat Party thinks is the best leader for them to move in the next election, in theory, she should be able to communicate those values, those liberal values, 1,000 times better than Trump would. In theory, right? If this is actually true, she would have 2 hours to communicate those values brilliantly and let the voter know that, hey, don't believe what you're hearing in media. This is who I am. And I'm going to be in front of a person who's going to challenge me, but I'm going to be able to communicate that clearly. Kamala's biggest problem, though, in my opinion, is that she's a terrible communicator. She is a terrible communicator. And the reason why she is because she overcomplicates everything. It's so hard to know what she's trying to say. Just listen to any of her long-form interviews. It's just very basic questions turn into these like three-minute long, things where Trump has the opposite problem. He dumbs down too much. Kamala just takes it to a stratosphere that doesn't like, it's like we're like, Trump is trying to cater to a one-year-old and Kamala is trying to cater to like an advanced AI. That's the kind of vibe I get from how they're trying to portray themselves to the public. And this here does a better job at communicating because at least you're reaching people. This here, in my opinion, the people that you're trying to reach and convert, you're just going to leave them confused. Because they're going to be like, okay, what are you trying to say? Like, what are you actually trying to say? So in theory, if she goes on a long-form podcast and she actually has those liberal values, this will work to her advantage because now she'll have the time to convey those values and convey what her vision is for the country from a traditionally liberal perspective. But with the Dick Cheney endorsement, I'm not so sure that's actually who she is, right? So I don't know. We'll see. I think she should. I don't think she will.
Yeah. I mean, the thing like that wins points for Donald Trump is that he speaks his mind and has a level of authenticity.
He's been consistent for many years. That works to his advantage.
And so that definitely appeals to people. And that's one of the, you know, especially huge strengths about the podcast medium or the long form interview medium, whether video or audio, is that that can really shine through over time. But man, that is a bright, uncomfortable spotlight if you're actually not authentic. And I mean, that is the obvious concern that so many people have about Kamala, is that, you know, she seems to be running away from those types of spotlights very, very consistently. And, you know, there's always lots of conditions that come with her appearances that try to help paint her in the best light possible, usually in an at least somewhat, if not wholly artificial way. And that's exactly what does not resonate with the vast majority of people. I mean, one of the byproducts of the internet, like, everyone is just awash in information and exposure to different people and different ideas, like, all the time. And, you know, the more we are exposed to that, the more we can develop a sense of having a BS meter. And if you, like, I think that the difficult position that she is in, to your point, is that the Democratic Party has and its core traditional liberal values. And so she can't articulate a strong position without making that, like, all of their actions make this absolutely clear. In order to appeal to their base and those formerly Democratic voters that they're, you know, hemorrhaging in mass, they need to not say what their actual true positions are. That, yes, we are out fully on board with being a party that is all in on forever wars, and we love censorship instead of free speech, and we espouse climate change values, but when the rubber meets the road, we value political correctness over actual effective climate policy. And, you know, the list goes on. And I mean, that's one of the things that I do give Galley credit for. And one of the things I don't think we mentioned earlier is that he is the host of the channel Hyperchange. So if you're familiar with, yes, the name Hyperchange and you're not familiar with the name Galley, those are, you know, one and the same. But, you know, Galley really called out the Biden administration very vocally and directly when they snubbed Elon at the EV summit. And, you know, I think that was a big thing for a lot of people. It was obviously a big thing for you. I don't think it was a surprise for a lot of people who were not members of the Democratic Party, because this type of thumb on the scale that unions have has, you know, been something that was pretty readily apparent from the outside for a long time. But it, you know, it's one of those moments where you're like, oh, wow, the things that we say and the things that we do 180 degrees opposed to one another. And there's lots of examples. And, you know, obviously the Republican Party is guilty of being absolute, you know, hypocrites as well. This was my, I know we've talked about this before, but my black pill on the Republican Party was when they did to Ron Paul exactly what the Democratic Party did to any number of great candidates, Bernie or Tulsi Gabbard, you know, just over and over again. And I just can't honestly, you know, like I said, I can't remove my bias on this one. All of the people that I have been excited about recently in politics on the Democratic side, they have literally pushed those people out of the party. And the same thing, like I said, was true of the Republican Party until now. All of a sudden, a lot of those people are actually being given a voice. So, like you said, Tulsi Gabbard, RFK Jr., those are two big names right there that, you know, have come to prominence here in the last couple of years in a big way. But before that, you know, there were a number of other people like Jordan Peterson was a progressive, and now he's been, you know, forced into the limelight as, you know, a far right wing neo-Nazi because he doesn't go along with the transgender ideology stuff through coercion. And, you know, Brett Weinstein, Eric Weinstein, like I could go on and on and on. Like there are so many great thinkers who are aligned on the values of liberty and freedom of speech and limited government that, I mean, these are the things that I have very strong beliefs around. And like I said, influenced by Ron Paul. And from my perspective, what it looks like is a lot of these people who were independent thinkers were basically unwelcome in the establishment wing of either the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. And it's just that, you know, this most recent cycle has been particularly hot for the Democratic side of the things. All these people have been forced out of the crazy wings and into a more centrist type of coalition. And somehow being forced to ally themselves with Trump, who I wouldn't say is particularly centrist, but he's definitely not as far right as the mainstream media would have you believe. And it's just a weird, an uncomfortable situation, but one that, you know, I can't escape from the fact that, like I said, literally almost every single person that I have great respect for as a thinker and a communicator, I have followed closely over the last 8 years, almost every single one of them has come out in support of Trump. You know, there are definitely exceptions to the rule, but almost all of them. And
yeah,
that is
weird.
Weird. I just can't, you know, I can't escape from that.
Democrats were right. It's weird.
It is weird.
It is weird. Yeah. I think that's What another thing that's funny, like talking about all the Democrats that go into the Republican side. Trump was a Democrat.
Yeah,
you know, people forget that he was a New York Democrat. You know, and when he ran, I still love that video of on The View where like The View is like they're gushing over him when he was. But I think what's very interesting about like watching his, I think this is one of the things. Go ahead, you want to say something? Go.
Well, I wanted to reference. So when we were on with Stephen Mark Ryan, one of the things that you said about Trump that you had a really hard time with and made you not want to trust him is that he was a New York person. Like you can't get out of
real estate, New York real estate.
You can't get out of New York real estate without being shady. But think about that fact. Like I would agree. I think that in order to be successful in New York, he not only had to play the game, he had to play the game of the Democratic Party elite by their rules. That's why he had to, like, there's not an option for him to be a Republican there during that period of time. He was a Democrat, played, so he knows all of the shady shenanigans inside and out because he played the game and won from the inside.
But yeah, so you would have to trust him that he's going to fix that. And that is the challenge
it
somebody
is
like me has. It's so hard. Like, how do I, bro? Like, come on. Like, that's the challenge. And I think that's the challenge of a lot of people is like that cognitive dissonance almost, right? Like, it's almost like in theory, he could be one of the forces to actually fix stuff that needs fixing. But by default, he would have had to play the game in order to learn how to break the game. Okay. Yep. So it's like, wow.
And so has he been fully corrupted by the game or not? You know, that's right, the question. Exactly. And I feel like that's one of the big takeaways I had from our conversation with Rohan was, you know, I think that Trump is absolutely cynical enough to feed people like RFK Jr. and Tulsi and Elon to the wolves to accomplish his own political aims. And I don't know if he's, you know, competent enough to actually accomplish the draining of the swamp that he talks about wanting to do, was not super effective at in his first campaign. And so, you know, I think that there's a real possibility that all these people that I care about and respect become cannon fodder in a very, very bloody political game over the next 4 years. And that does, you know, bring, I think, concern on my point. But when I sit and I think through the implications of that, it's like, well, you know, at least they will be given an opportunity to stand up for the values that they believe in, that I believe in, and that I feel like if we don't address, actually do put the United States in, you know, existential danger.
Yeah.
So if we don't, like, I agree with Elon that if we don't deal with the overregulation and the bloat of the United States federal government, we will, like, it may not be in the next 4 years, but will inevitably in the next several decades become a crippled, old, incompetent country that is a shell of its former self, instead of having the vitality that America has shown in the face of challenges, you know, over and over and over again. Yeah. In the course of its several hundred year history. And so I agree that, well, if he's at least saying the right things about the things that he wants to do, and he's allying himself, this group of people that I actually have, you know, a tremendous amount of hope in and respect for, instead of neocons like John Bolton and, you know, just like the absolute trash that he surrounded himself with in his first presidency, then, you know, I don't know if it's going to work. But man, I sure would hate to look back and regret not making an effort to at least try.
Yeah, for sure. I think the flip side of that is if he were to act in a way that we think he could act, which is in a very selfish way, and just using people like Elon, RFK, and Tulsi just to get what he wants, I think the backlash from that will be so severe that it would be it would just be suicide, political suicide. It would be character suicide. It would be legacy suicide. Because now I think the unique thing about this election cycle is I see it with my own two eyes. And again, this could be bubble thinking or just isolated thinking. I think who he is appealing to now are fundamentally much more free thinking and independent in their way of thought. And I don't think they necessarily have a like any allegiance to Trump or any allegiance to the MAGA movement in a passionate way, like the core MAGA base. Like the core MAGA base is like very like Trump is, he is our savior. He is the only one who can do this, right? The people he's trying to cater to win this election are not those people. Are like, okay, he seems a lot more logical than in his approach than Kamala. It seems like he has a lot better policies that are America focused. He is partnering with the right people to get change done. Like objectively speaking, partnering with someone like an Elon Musk to clean up government is a brilliant idea. Like that's the best person you can use for that. These are all very pragmatic, objectively good policy decisions. And that cohort of the voting base, if he starts doing that, I don't think Tulsi is going to stand up for that shit. I think Tulsi is going to be like, yo, you used me. I don't think Elon's going to stand up for that shit. I mean, Elon has shown that he doesn't care. Like in his head, is truth or not truth from his perspective, right? Is good or not good, right? I don't think RFK would stand for that either. Like these are people that from my viewpoint, from my vantage point, I don't know them personally, but they carry themselves, it seems, as people that are much more free thinking, independent than your typical politician. So that's one downside risk that I see. And that's another thing that helps him too, because it's like, okay, so is that a signal that says if he's willing to cater to that group of people, knowing the downside risk of using them as a way to get his political stuff done and just throwing them aside and getting what he wants done and using them to get the votes, right? Like he surely must know that if he crosses these people, it's like, it's not going to be a good outcome. It's not going to be, I don't know, that might be naive of me to think, but it's, I mean, if I'm in his shoes, I would be thinking about that. Like if I have Elon, RFK, and Tulsi on my corner, like, do I really want to piss him off? Seems like a really bad idea.
I mean, if he ends up in the presidency, I think that those three people are going to be a big part of the reason why. And yeah, I mean, seems like not a smart move to turn on people who are very representative of independent or go for it.
No, do you want to say something first? How much do you think Elon has swayed this election?
I think he has swayed it dramatically.
Why?
I think the purchase of X, one of the most consequential things that's happened in American politics in many, many, many years. And I say that, you know, based on the book by Tim Urban, What's Our Problem? And, you know, he's got a great illustration where, you know, I think a lot of people felt like everyone around them believed this narrative that, and it goes back to the beginning of our conversation about the legacy, the narrative that the legacy media was trying to push around COVID and then around a number of other things, that while that censorship stronghold was in place, and not only were they hearing the same thing from their news, you know, station as they were seeing on Facebook and Twitter and all their social media, like this straitjacket on narrative control that existed gaslit a lot of people into thinking, I guess I'm the crazy one. Like I use my eyes and I use my brain, and on what I look out and I see is this, but literally 100% of the other incoming data that I'm seeing doesn't agree with that. I guess I just trust the crowd. Maybe I must be stupid. And like, this is literal, you know, abusive gaslighting psychology. And we've seen the, you know, the psychological experiments. We know how it works when people do that. Like, not only there's ones about, you know, if a person in a lab coat tells you to shock someone for an experiment, like you'll do it even until they are seemingly screaming in pain. So there's that, like, just abdication of personal responsibility to an authority figure that is just like deeply ingrained in us. But then also just mob mentality. It gets to be really hard when it seems like everyone around you doesn't agree with you to stand up. And I think by Elon standing up and then allowing other people to share their thoughts, opinions, and ideas, as Stephen Mark Ryan would say, freely, then all of a sudden people started to realize, wait a second, this thing that I've been seeing, thinking, believing, feeling like was true and couldn't find any other like corroborating validation of in the outside world, all of a sudden, poof, it just magically appears back into existence. And people realize, wait a second, I wasn't crazy. Like lots of people, not only, you know, is it lots of, you know, it's not that not percent of people disagree with me. It's that 60 or 70% of people agree with me. They just were too scared to say anything. And I think cutting through
or
that
actively suppressed.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Even if they said anything, it was removed from public life. The combination of those things is like, it was a strangling hold of totalitarianism that had really descended on free societies in the West, and we're still fighting against. And being able to actually think collectively by exchanging, like it's the combination of X and then also podcasting, that these two things have been a place where actual sense making and collective thinking can occur independently of what is sanctioned and allowed by the state. And that helps us to realize all of the stuff that's been going on, like, is not okay. It wasn't okay at the time. I can't believe we went along with it. I can't believe I let them make me feel like I was crazy. Screw all of them.
Yeah, that's, I think I agree with all of that, honestly. I think Elon's town hall run is uniquely innovative, right? I think that is going to help convert some people, I believe, because if you watch those town halls, which they're all available on the channel, in case you guys are curious, accidental plug, I'm a YouTuber now, I gotta do these things, Hans, okay? Go check it out. But anyway, you know, giving away that free check for $1 million to, you know, a random person for the rest of the year, right? I remember Andrew Yang tried to do something. Go ahead.
That should probably be looked at by law enforcement.
It should. Okay. even though I remember Andrew Yang did something very, very similar in the 2019 thing, where he was like, you know, because he was a big proponent of UBI, and he was like, if you go on my website and, you know, sign the petition that says, you know, we need UBI, you know, we'll select 10 people at random that would get $1,000 per month for the rest of the year. But that was fine, because, you know, a Democrat did it, right? But when the number goes to $1 million, because the guy can afford it, it becomes potentially illegal. But, you know, I don't think.
Never mind all that George Soros money.
Yeah, no, forget about George Soros. Yeah, it's okay. He can keep doing whatever he wants. I think that run is unique because I think it's giving a lot of people that traditionally didn't pay a lot of attention to politics, it are now paying attention to politics. And I think there's going to be a level of sort of like, well, if the richest guy in the world who's very good at making companies is voting for Trump, maybe I should too. I think there's a level of people that will definitely 1000% do that. And I think those are the kind of people that are potential flips that would traditionally vote Democrat that are now going to vote Republican. Okay. I also think that I agree with your point of X. I it's funny you say this because I have a friend who used to work at Twitter. He used to work at Twitter pre and post Elon acquisition. Okay. And he made a comment very similar to yours that said, if it wasn't for Elon buying Twitter, the political discourse in this country would be so different. Because Twitter, traditionally, now X, has been a place for most people to get their news. That's just true. A lot of people get their news through Twitter. And now Twitter, now X, has completely transformed in how that news propagates through the For You and the, you know, your the algorithm, right? I laugh when the people, you know, when there are people out there that say that traditionally speaking, Twitter was more right-leaning. It leaned conservative back in the day. It was like, that was such a mind-blowing conclusion. It is now unequivocally much more balanced, much more centered. Some people could make the argument that it has a right lean. I can buy that for sure. When you have so many people already using this app, are getting their news in a very different way, and they're choosing to stay on the app, and more people are using it, that tells you that there's been a demand for that type of content, that type of information, but there hasn't been a supply, right? And so that supply demand dynamic has now changed. And so by default, you are going to expose more people to information that traditionally wouldn't have been exposed to it. And that could flip votes. And my point is, I don't see the opposite, like the opposite of like, okay, how can Democrats get Republicans to come to their side outside of the neocons? Again, that cohort of people is tied to a media machine that is dying, literally dying. Okay. So I agree with you. I think he has shifted it. I mean, again, we could be talking from a bubble perspective, but I think it's objective to say that this guy probably has about as much influence as he's probably a top 10 influencer in the world. You know, Kardashian, Rogan, Swift, these are the people up there. You know, it's like, who has more influence? Taylor Swift endorsing Kamala Harris or Elon Musk endorsing Trump? And my argument would be Taylor Swift's endorsement is very expected. Like her cohort is probably already going to vote for Kamala. I don't think she's going to turn a lot of people to Kamala. I do think that Elon's going to turn a lot of people to Trump that would have either been non-voters, third party, or Democrats. I think that effect has a lot more effect than your Swift or whoever, like your Hollywood actors and your musicians coming out in support of Kamala. You already know they're going to support Kamala. Trump supporting Trump is a big, like, again, Trump, RFK, Tulsi. These are three people that flipped votes, and Elon probably more than most of all.
Yeah, I think authenticity is, you know, another point to bring back up here. Like when Taylor Swift or these Hollywood celebrities endorse a Democratic candidate, it's like, yeah, but do you actually believe that? Or are you just saying that because you have to? And, you know, like, I don't know if that's fair or not, but that's definitely the sense that I think a lot of Americans have is like, yeah, like you have to go along to get along in that town. Like in your business, if you don't say that, you're not going to get work. So, of course, you can't say what you actually think. Whereas for Elon, who is a lifelong voter, to say, you know what, I don't support Biden or Kamala anymore, I'm throwing in with Trump, like, you know that he legitimately believes that. And that's not just words that are coming out of his mouth. And so, you know, whatever you assign the reasons for that being, at least you believe that's what he authentically thinks and believes. And I think that also, like I said earlier, goes a long way with people who have a giant BS meter these days.
Yeah. And, you know, he's done an 8-hour long, you know, town hall run over the weekend, you know, in four separate days to explain why. And I think that that has, again, in this age of like podcasting, long form content, I think a lot of people are paying attention to that. It's a lot of activation. It's an activation of a voting base that that the Republican Party wouldn't have gotten in the past. And I don't see the same level of activation for Kamala, because I think she fundamentally has a lot of issues to activate. I just don't think she's that exciting of a candidate, especially when she's so last minute and she has such a hard time conveying a vision for the country because she overcomplicates her messaging for no reason. I think by default, she's at a disadvantage. Huge disadvantage.
I don't think it's for no reason. Like, I think saying nothing is the exact goal. Like, I don't think she's off script. I think that she is abiding by the exact playbook. You know, to give them their due, that kind of worked for Biden against Trump. That, you know, their whole strategy is not Trump. Like, just let Trump talk, and by talking, he'll hang himself. And as long as we don't say anything objectionable, we'll win. And like I said, that did win for them in 2020, but I don't know that it's going to work this time around. It certainly doesn't resonate. It doesn't, like you say, activate people. And I think a lot of people right now are activated because they've seen the deterioration in their quality of life over the last 4 years. And it is upsetting. It's motivating. Like, we need something different. And, I don't see any path for her to make a compelling case to the average American voter that she can do anything differently during the next 4 years than was done over the past 4 years to actively make their day-to-day lives better. Like, there are some cohorts where, you know, maybe she can win with, but like, I don't think it's enough.
And I think that's why she's a candidate, because of how everything transpired with Biden. I don't think any Democrat that knows how to play politics would have seen the situation and be like, I don't have enough time to convey why I'm better. I don't have, you're giving me how many days? You're giving me 90 days to go up against...
That's absolutely not true, because RFK Jr. was that person.
That's very true.
He, you know, it wasn't that they didn't have options that they could present that could do that. It's that those options were absolutely unacceptable to the Democratic Party.
That's a great point. That's 1,000% true. So, and when Biden stepped down, right, they could have opened up the process. But I think the response was, If you are a politician that wants to actually win and doesn't want to ruin their... Because if you lose an election, you're probably not going to win another election in the future, unless you wait 30 years like Biden did, or whatever, 20 years, and run again against Trump, right? Unless you want to do that. So I think with that short window and the situation that they were in, I think it was like Kamala was just the default. Like, I used to think it's like, hey, they overthrew her because they want Kamala to be president. Like, I think it's more like, hey, it was a horrific mismanagement of everything. They were not honest about Biden's cognitive ability, and they waited way too long. Biden was his ego and he was way too stubborn. And then he just set up the party for downfall, because it's like, you know, it's like, this is where you guys are, and good luck.
I mean, the party that put him, the party that put him in power in the first place was, you know, like, you have to be incompetent to select that guy as your commander in chief in the first place.
Yeah, but he won.
Because the bar was so low and they had a lot of, you know, other things on their side, with the legacy media still having, you know, some shred of credibility left, and people just being so tired of, you know, the craziness of the 4 years prior. Like, we now have a proof point that the craziness was not because Donald Trump was president. The craziness was because politics in the United States has just reached this level of crazy. And so we know the next 4 years are going to be crazy kind of regardless. And it's like, okay, well, I guess, you know, whatever it is that they're trying to warn us away from with Trump can't be any worse than what we've already been having. In fact, you know, maybe there is a chance that it could be better, because even though I remember all the crazy things that he said, I also remember a lot of things that were actually a lot better under his presidency until COVID broke out, which, you know, I think is also something that lies at the feet of people who lean primarily left.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Yeah, dude. It's so crazy to think that that same guy is now the guy that's running for again for that side that is starting to like accrue all these different people that traditionally would have never supported him, that would have been actively against him, very vocally.
I mean, like, I cannot understand, and I can't state this strongly enough, if this presidential race was RFK Jr. as the Democratic Party candidate versus Donald Trump as the Republican Party candidate, I'd be voting for RFK Jr.
Yeah.
Most of the people that I can think of would be voting for RFK Jr.
Same.
They had the opportunity. So why? And this is the thing that like just does not compute, unless you are willing to go to, you know, dark and cynical places. Why would the Democratic Party refuse to have someone like RFK Jr. represent them as their candidate in this election?
Because they're not connected to the will of the people. Because they're not connected to what the people actually are after, what they're hungry for, what their displeasure is, what they're upset about, how they get their information. Like it's almost like they use the legacy systems to figure out what people actually want and actually care about in a world where we're in a completely different. We've moved on from how we used to poll for what people wanted. It's obvious. I 1,000% agree with you. If the Democrats were stuck with RFK Jr., he would have whooped Trump's ass. I think he would have won by a lot. I really think so. Regardless of what people think, and again, but you know, the mainstream media machine actively smeared a Democratic candidate in the same way they smeared Trump. Yeah, that is what's mind blowing to me. So it's like,
and they did the exact same thing to Tulsi, you know, in the last election cycle. And that's, you know,
Elon.
Like Tulsi laid Kamala Harris absolutely bare for who she is. She
ended her campaign.
She ended it like decisively. Yeah. And that is the reason, like, you know, it is not okay in the Democratic Party for you to go against the appointed person, which, you know, is like Kamala ticks the boxes. A woman and a person of color who will say and do anything we ask her to. Like, it does, as long, she'll be a parrot for whatever the party says. It doesn't matter what her past history was, what her past positions were. Like, she's completely puppetable, and she comes in the right form factor. So she is the right person.
And it's such a shame, right? Because that's like, part of me says like, that's an unfair characterization. But then you look at how she literally flipped every single policy she's had historically to like, to try to be more moderate, right? It's like, okay, yeah. So you're just a politician. You're a politician. You just want power. You want to be in a place where you can just live your lifelong dream of becoming president of the United States, because that is what you want to do. It's not a service to the country. It's a goal you have to be in a seat of power. It's the opposite of what this thing is supposed to be. And the problem is that, again, I am not sold that her opponent is the opposite. That's the problem. Some of us in the more independent-minded, I would say, place we're at is like, okay, it's like, and this is, you know, we go back to the state of politics, yada, yada. It's whatever. But anyway, I do think this one, okay, so who wins? Should we make a prediction podcast next week? Next week, Friday.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I've come out on X and I said I think Trump's going to win by a lot, but it could change. If Kamala goes on Joe Rogan, I'm willing to change that prediction, because that could shift a lot.
Well, yeah, she would have to go on, and she would have to absolutely defy expectations in how she's able to handle that interview, and
like she did on the debate.
Yeah. You know, that one, okay. A lot
better than people expected. Yeah.
So can she repeat that and be compelling? That's definitely what she would have to do. And, you know, like, that is, if she could do that on Joe Rogan's platform and do it better than Donald Trump can do it, because, you know, people are going to listen to both who are, you know, trying to make that decision if she goes on, then, you know, maybe she's got a shot. Like, it has to be doing something different than what she's been doing. That's for sure. Which is the reason why it might actually, you know, the reason she might actually go on is because she's got to do something. So then if she goes on, the question will be, how does she perform? How does she execute? I mean, it's got to be better than Mark Cuban has executed in trying to be her mouthpiece kind of in a, unofficial capacity. So,
yeah. I mean, props to Cuban for doing it. I mean, I actually respect Mark a lot for coming out and being vocal and trying to engage people on what he thinks, on why he thinks she should be president, right? I disagree with almost all of it, but at least he's out there having the conversation. That should be Kamala. That should be Kamala, right? I think, yeah, dude, it's like, man.
And the one thing that I'll give Cuban is that I think that he actually does hold, you know, strong principled, classically liberal values. And he thinks that those...
He can articulate it.
And he thinks that the Democratic Party still align with those values. I don't think that they actually do. But, you know, I think that he's a true believer and he believes that, you know, those are the things that the Democratic Party are able to actually accomplish. So, you know, I think it's an extremely positive thing to have people like that who are able to, you know, steel man and make the best arguments possible for a position. Because that's what, you know, we need in order to make well-informed decisions is we need the best of people's opinions rather than the most ridiculous. And it's hard, you know, it's easy to say that and it's hard to actually do that because, you know, the most ridiculous forms of people's opinions are the ones that are the easiest to make fun of and feel the best. But I would agree. I do give him a certain amount of credibility and respect for being willing to like be a giant heel and the butt of a lot of, you know, social commentary, to stand up for what, like I said, I think he actually believes.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think ultimately his support is probably stemmed in, I think a lot of that is true, but I'll also, you know, in the same way that Elon is going with Trump because he views Trump as a remover of roadblocks for his businesses, because the Democrat Party obviously is trying to actively prevent Tesla and SpaceX from, especially SpaceX as of late, which is weird with the Starlink and SpaceX stuff, with the regulation stuff, right? That they're actively trying to slow down these companies. Whereas I think, and that's why he's supporting Trump in a way. I think Mark is supporting the Dems because I bet you he thinks that they're going to give him a better ability to ramp up cost plus drugs. I think that's part of like the support. It's like, hey, you know, that's why I'm going to go to bat with you guys, because once you get into office, cost plus drugs is going to go through the roof, because maybe that becomes the primary provider of drugs for Medicare, Medicaid, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because it's going to dramatically lower the cost to the population. And I think that's great. I mean, if you can dramatically lower the cost of healthcare for the population, fantastic. You know, and maybe Kamala's like, yo, I got your back. In the same way that Trump to Elon's like, yo, I got your back. Politics, right?
Right.
Yep.
All right. I'm depressed now. Bye, everybody. Bye. Like, subscribe, blah, blah, blah.